It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Anymore. We're saved. We're saved. We're saved. The U.S. troops are coming out of Iraq. It's over. It's over. It's over. Is it? I don't know. Let's ask Charles Goyette, author of The Dollar Meltdown. I know he and I working on this a long time. On Charles Goyette Show, every day we had to have an update on the war, who was behind it, what the lies were, what's coming. We got so much stuff coming out. We got the Pat Tillman story. That is coming out. That's going to be a huge movie. And I think it's being released today in some places. And that's going to tell a story that we've been screaming about for a long time. Charles was the man when it came in just anything about the war. And I got to ask you, Charles, are we done? Are we out of Iraq?
Yeah, you know, Ernie, hi, and it's awfully good news. The war in Iraq, it's mission accomplished for the second time now. Can you imagine?
I was reading it, and they were saying, but while the remaining 50,000 troops will no longer have a formal combat mission after September 1, they will be well-armed and possibly coming under fire as they join in manhunts for Al-Qaeda figures or other extremists. So I'm going, it's all a lie.
Yeah, it's all a lie. It's, you know, but if it were as simple as them announcing the date, a drop-dead date, and saying the troops come home on this day, we're going to declare victory and come home, I wonder why they didn't do that years ago. Oh, I forgot. Bush already did. You may remember the end of combat operations or major combat operations in May 1st of 2003, on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln. So it's here we go again. The United States military empire has not ended. The embassy, the size of the Vatican, still stands. The military presence still stands. They had an election 4 months ago. Hasn't been decided 3 or 4 months ago, hasn't been decided to the satisfaction of the American government yet. And so it ain't over until it's over.
Well, you know, one of the big reasons why you're a big supporter of Dr. Paul was, and his run for president in 2008, was because of his stance on the war. And I remember you were the first person on national television to even mention his name in regard to his campaign on Fox, and that just went planetary. I still got that YouTube up, man. It's very popular. You know, Charles Goyette's up there saying, yeah, let me tell you, he knows what's going on. Well, now we had his 75th birthday was just, yesterday?
It's actually today, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, I remember like it happened today. I remember the day I was invited to come down to the studios and do a segment with another talk show host, a national talk show host and Fox contributor named Mike Gallagher, about some rock and roll concert on the steps of the United States Capitol that the organizers of the rock and roll concert were going to pay for. They're going to pay to pick up the trash. They were going to pay for whatever security were involved. They were going to pay for what damage might have taken place. It was a rock and roll concert. I mean, does the fate of the Republic hinge on such stuff? And yet they devoted time on the program to that. And so driving down to the studio, to this day I remember, how am I ever going to work an endorsement of Ron Paul into this discussion about whether or not there should be a rock and roll concert on the steps of the Capitol? But somehow in the waning minutes, and, you know, I've, like you, been in broadcasting a long, long time. I know how these anchors are. I know they've got a producer yelling in their ear, you know, this segment's running long. Wrap it up, wrap it up, wrap it up. And I got one more crack at the microphone, and I just let them have it about there was only one candidate in the race, that nobody was paying any attention to, was qualified to understand the economic calamity. And you think about it, it was before anybody really had an idea what was going on in the economy and where it was going to lead. So there's only one candidate that really understands the economic calamity that the Republicans and Democrats have created for this country that we'll be facing soon. And there's only one candidate that understands the issues behind the war and the war itself. And there's only one candidate that understands the national security state, and that's Congressman Ron Paul. And the anchor guy's kind of like looking at me with big round saucer eyes, wondering, you know, where did that come from? But anyway, we got it on the air. And I was
yeah, it worked. Very, very well, it. You that know, worked. What's happened, though, is that since then, all of a sudden, if you're not a prophet, he sure is. Mm-hmm. And you know, well, you or Dr. Paul, somebody's a prophet. You certainly pegged what was coming, and he sure as heck did. So now, in deference to his birthday, yesterday, you gave him a birthday present. What'd you do?
Well, I'm glad you asked about it. His son, Rand Paul, as everybody knows, is running for the United States Senate from the state of Kentucky. And so the people who planned the original Ron Paul money bomb back in 2007 thought they'd put together a money bomb for, and they call it a money bomb because they like hope that it's an explosive fundraising event. They planned a money bomb for yesterday and today for Rand Paul in Kentucky. And they planned it to coincide today with Congressman Paul's 75th birthday. And out of respect for Congressman Paul, I wanted to participate and help out. In fact, he's even got a message. Congressman Paul's got a message. I saw it on the Daily Paul today. DailyPaul.com's got a message that says, you know, normally on my birthday I have some sort of political event, a barbecue or something like that. I'm not having one this year. You know, it's because of the state of the economy in part, and also because the best present I could wish for is that people would participate in this Rand Paul money bomb. And so it started yesterday, and a lot of good people rolled up their shirt sleeves to help make it work. People, Ernie, you know, like Michael Nystrom and Trevor Lyman and so on. And it's been a great event. The last time I looked, and you can go, you can listen to
it. I'm looking at right now. It's at $219,000.
Great. Well, I was hoping that if we hit 200, I was thinking that would be a remarkable accomplishment considering the state of the economy. You know, last year they had the Run Rand Run money bomb, and they raised, in 24 hours, they raised $436,000. So it was the biggest grassroots fundraising event ever for Rand Paul and for an event of that size. But I thought if they could make $200,000 today, then that would be great. Well, I'm glad you saw that. And you can listen at the website, which is isupportrandpaul.com, isupportrandpaul.com. You can click on and listen. And it'll run until midnight tonight, Hawaiian time. So I don't know what that is, like 4 or 5 in the morning Pacific time. But one thing I can say is they've scheduled a lot of very, very interesting guests. I don't mind telling you about a couple of them. I got to talk with Peter Schiff yesterday. Peter Schiff, as many of you know, is the president of Euro-Pacific Capital, author of the bestseller Crash Proof, one of the guys warning about the economic downturn and the bungling response that we would see to it, which it did. We did see exactly as he described it. And has been a great force, actually, on cable TV in places like CNBC and Bloomberg and, I suppose, Fox Business Channel, trying to tell the American people that 2 + 2 = 4 and that we can't spend our way to prosperity in this country. So I got to visit with Peter Schiff. It was just the day after, actually, or I guess a week after, Peter was defeated in his own bid for the Senate from the state of Connecticut. He ran as a Republican in the Republican primary in Connecticut for the United States Senate, and was defeated there. But we got a chance to visit with him. He remains a personal favorite of mine. I'm just like really, really like him. Speaking of personal favorites, Ernie, I know a personal favorite of yours, and you hooked me up with him a long time ago. Actually, no, come to think of it, before that we had him on the air a long time ago, and then we hooked up with him in Washington when we went to the Ron Paul rally in the Capitol
Bovard
back in the summer of 2008. It was Adam Kokesh.
Oh, yeah.
And Adam joined me on the Rand Paul money bomb as well. He's an Iraq War veteran who was very, very clear indeed about the prospects of winning a war of occupation after he left active duty. And then he ran for Congress in New Mexico. I know, Ernie, you helped him quite a bit. And as luck would have it, he was defeated in his primary. But now he has grabbed a microphone. He does a program in New Mexico called Adam versus the Man. I said, Adam, tell me what's your show about? He says, it's just the way it sounds. It's Adam versus the Man.
I did his first show when he first started his radio program. I went on with him to get him going there in Albuquerque, and he is a really good voice, certainly from his age bracket, being in his 20s, being able to articulate the principles like he does. It's amazing what the next generation has in store for this planet. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. But tell me about Peter Schiff. You know, we're going into this. When we come back, I want to hear what Peter Schiff, if anything, he had to say about his loss in Connecticut, because I mean, he went up against the big money. They weren't gonna, you know, let him get in there, and I'm wondering why. And I'm curious as to what he had to say about it and what his plans are, because you know, when you know what's gonna happen, there's lots of money to be made, and Charles knows how to do that too. We'll be with that information when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Hancock about some truth, justice, and I don't know what used to be the American way. What the heck does that mean anymore, Charles? I mean, the American way. I mean, if I'm in, I don't know, anywhere else in the world, what comes to mind?
Frankly.
I'm sorry?
There are certain parts of the world where it means aerial bombardment. It means shock and awe. Look, America's the 800-pound gorilla to the rest of the world, and you know, if you act funny, you're gay. It's like the big cop in the neighborhood that roughs the kids up. You get out of line, you look at somebody cross-eyed, you smart off to Officer Krupke, and you're liable to get the you know what pounded out of you. You know, we have not yet learned in this country to mind our own business, to tend to our own knitting. We will learn it in the current economic environment as it unfolds, when the American people find themselves teetering on the brink of becoming at least a second world nation, when they find out that all of the prosperity that they had assumed as a part of their birthright, when they find out that the prospects for their children to have a better life than they themselves are having, when they find out that those prospects have been dashed, they're going to have to face up to the reality that they have been dashed by the act of neocons and American empire and the growth of the police state. So Americans will wake up to, you know, to what we have done and how we have squandered, we have gambled away our heritage for a mess of internationalist pottage. They will wake up to that. But in the meantime, you know, empires die hard, and this one's going to die pretty hard itself.
Well, tell me about Peter Schiff's campaign. I mean, did you even talk about it at all?
Yeah, we talked about it just a little bit, enough to that I was able to elicit from him an idea that, or at least the thought that maybe he hasn't had enough of this political stuff yet, and that maybe he'll be back and, you know, take another run at it sometime. I suppose, you know, it gets. You know, you acquire a taste for it, and if you like it, and, you know, Peter's a pretty scrappy guy, and he doesn't mind being in the limelight. And I suppose as events further validate the things that he talked about in the campaign with respect to the country, that he may have a better prospect. You know, he picked a hard state to run a race like that in. I mean, you know, Connecticut is made up of, you know, Wall Street bankers and, you know, a lot of people that make money in New York and in Wall Street, and then live in Connecticut, and you know, it's the state it's the state that gave the nation people like Joe Lieberman.
So he was running up against the TARP money.
Yeah, he really had an uphill climb. I don't think it mattered to him, but he may actually be back someday. I don't know. as we've primarily talked about the economy, and it's stuff, Ernie, that, you know, I've talked about on your show as recently as the last week or two, and that I know you talk about all the time. I made a big issue during the course of the program yesterday about a couple of things. I thought the most telling thing of all was that the head of the Office of Management and Budget has effectively said, look, all of our forecasts for where the deficit is going to come in, what the revenues are and the spending are, have been way, way off, and things are a lot more negative than we said. Well, big surprise. You know, they're more negative. They're more negative than the establishment guys said, but they're much more in line with what guys like I know myself and Peter Schiff have been saying about the period that we're heading into. I mean, you know, it was only back in the spring that when you turned on TV and you turned on, you know, the flax and the talking heads, if indeed you do, everybody was talking about green shoots. We've got green shoots sprouting up everywhere. It was the new buzz phrase of the day, and green shoots meant, you know, it's springtime and we're going to have a recovery and everything's great and these are the early signs. Well, the reality was that there was no recovery. What visible economic activity people saw in the spring, and the reason the stock market had a little run and so on, was all of that stimulus money. So to the extent that the economy showed signs of vitality is because it had been given a lot of cocaine by the government. And, you know, you give a corpse enough cocaine and you can at least get a heartbeat. So, you know, all the stimulus, well, the stimulus money got spent and it had its visible effect. It's like a rush. It's like, you know, some guy on drugs, he gets a rush before he collapses. It's like your kids that, you know, get high on sugar and bounce off the walls for an hour or two and then collapse and fall asleep in the chair before dinner time. You know, it was the same thing with the economy. So there was no recovery. There were no green shoots. It was all eyewash for the public. And now here we are deeper in debt than we were to begin with. And nothing to show for it but a real inflation rate of probably, I beg your pardon, a real unemployment rate of officially 9.5, I guess, but really probably between 17 and 20%. So anyway, we talked with some other people though on the Rand Paul money bomb that I ought to tell you about. Here's an interesting fellow I met. Clint Didier is his name, and a football fans, and I think you're one, Ernie, may even remember him if you go way, way back to the Washington Redskins and they had the Hogs and stuff when they were in three Super Bowls. This was Clint Didier, and Clint Didier was a tight end for the Washington Redskins. He was a farm boy from the state of Washington, played with the Redskins for 7 years, including in three Super Bowls, and he came home, returned to his roots as a farmer in the state of Washington, and decided this year to get involved in politics, made a run for the Senate in the state of Washington. He was endorsed by Ron Paul, and a couple days ago, Tuesday, was the primary in the state of Washington, and he was defeated as well. So I had a whole bunch of what you might think were losers. I mean, Peter Schiff was defeated, Clint Didier was defeated, and Adam Kokesh was defeated in their runs for office. But, you know, you can't judge these things by electoral success or failure, by who's in office or who's not. Lord knows people with our perspective on these things don't judge them that way.
I don't judge them by, I trust the computers.
Ron Paul was elected president, but that 2008 presidential campaign, win, lose, or draw, made a big, big difference in the consciousness of the people.
You know what Thomas was saying earlier today? Because we had on Freedom's Phoenix a picture of this guy. We got Freedom's Phoenix all over the Liberty on Tour bus. And this one guy went up and got a picture next to the bus with his arm. It has the Lovolution logo on his arm, you know, tattooed on there. And Thomas goes, you know, it's easier. I've heard it's easier to become a millionaire than it is to coin a phrase. So I'm a gazillionaire phrase coin in category. But you know, tell me, do you remember how much they lost by? Did Peter Schiff know what the percentages were?
That's a really good point, and I'm really glad you brought that up because I don't know, and you know, I'm a real skeptic about the electoral process as the source of the restoration of the republic anyway, so I don't pay as much attention to that as I did when a young man when I lived and breathed that stuff. But one number did stick with me, and I'll give it to you just kind of in the ballpark as I recall it. When Ron Paul ran for president, he was able to eke out something like 4% of the vote in his primary in the state of Washington. Clint Didier ran there on Tuesday as a Ron Paul candidate, only candidate across the nation I've ever heard. In fact, only person in public, in pursuit of public office or in public office I've ever heard, cite, as Ron Paul has done, letters of mark and reprisal that are provided for in the Constitution as an avenue of dealing with things like, you know, like Al Qaeda. But in any event, so Ron Paul in 2008 wins 4% of the vote. Clint Didier won, I believe, 14. So it is a sign that our the ranks of people who are starting to get it, at least it appears to be a sign to me, Ernie, that the ranks of people who are beginning to get it are swelling.
Well, the ones that keep voting.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them, you know, they're getting more. Can you got to go, or you want to stay another segment, Charles?
No, I'll hang with you for sure.
All right, cool. We got plenty to talk about here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and talk show host, most independent talk show host in America, Charles Goyette. He was hard at it yesterday, sharing with us all that was going on in Rand Paul's money bomb. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Before we come back, because I like it. But we're on the air here on Liberty News Radio with my good friend Charles Goyette, author of The Dollar Meltdown. You know, we should talk about that a second. Let's do, you know, The Dollar Meltdown. When did that come out? I mean, I know you hit the New York Times best-selling list. I know it got translated into Korean and Chinese. Give me a break. You know, I mean, when you start getting into Apache, then you're really there. But, tell us about the book. We have the paperback's probably coming out here pretty soon. And then you got another book. You were so successful with that. Your first book, all of a sudden you got New York publishers. They love you long time.
It's pretty heady stuff for a author to have a New York Times bestseller with your first book. I'm very, very pleased, but it's because it's an important book for the Times. I will tell you, The Dollar Meltdown is a book about where we are in the economy, and that's exactly how it starts out. It starts out with a section. It's written for everybody to understand the kind of thing that we are headed to. I mean, you know, this whole dislocation and upset and difficulties we're going through now are only the first opening scenes of the new movie. So where we are in the economy, part two of the book is how we got here. In my view, the most important part of the book is the third part, part three, what happens next. If you buy the book and read nothing else, read part three. Read most especially the part about the command economy and how the command economy grows and how the economy creates poverty and what it means for you and the things that the command economy, this is a template that has been enacted over and over again. This isn't our first economic crisis rodeo in the world. We've been through these things before, and they unfold in a certain fashion. Read the third part of The Dollar Meltdown so you will be prepared to prosper from it and to protect yourself and your family. It's about the command economy and the steps that are invoked as the currency dies as a currency. I mean, think about the tension inherent in the fact that the United States government is the biggest debtor in the world. And yet right now, to fund that debt, the United States government is offering some of the lowest interest rates in history. Typically, when somebody's over their capacity to repay debts and they have to borrow from their Visa card to pay on their MasterCard, you know, the creditors start pulling the credit line. The MasterCard says, you know, we're cutting you off, and your interest rates don't go lower, they go higher. So we're in an extraordinary situation now. The tension is growing. The rubber band is being stretched, and it can't last. And I want you to understand what happens after the phase we're in now, the consequences of the dollar creation activities of the Fed, money that has already been created and sits on the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, all the poisonous assets, the toxic paper they've taken on, to reliquify the banks and at the expense of the U.S. dollar, and how this will impact you, and to understand things that are coming like wage and price controls and what that will mean for you, and rationing, and how that will work and why that will be implemented, so you can understand the steps in the command economy. The final portion of the book, actually, a lot of people turn right to that when they get the book, is recommendations about how to prosper and how to survive in a period like this, what to do to take care of yourself and your family. But actually, I think you should concentrate on Chapter 3. If you need some of the background about the nature of money, a little monetary theory, what kind of countries prosper, what kind of cultures do well, what kind of monetary systems destroy people's prosperity, what kind of monetary systems enable people to be prosperous, the whole book is important to you. But by all means, understand what's coming next. That's the real virtue of it.
And, you know, I want to tell the audience this so they understand. If you read Dr. Paul's book, Revolution, a Manifesto, you have Thomas Wood's book, Meltdown, you know, his book. And I read all these books. And a lot of them, they were really talking down to, you know, the base fifth grade level. Kind of, I got the impression they're really rudimentary kind of concepts and bringing you along and so on. I guess they were talking to government educated populace, but your book was totally different. I got more out of your book in two chapters. I did the entire of the other. I mean, they're did their part. They're very good. They had their own points. But I felt like I got a master's degree and didn't feel that I had to learn a bunch of new terms either. It was just very, just like as you did your talk show, you walked them through it. You said, look, this is where we're at. This is why I'm so convinced. You didn't try and, you know, just beat them over the head with anything. Just you walked them through your experiences, what you did as your careers in the precious metals and on the radio and talking with all these experts, doing the research for the book. And then at the end, you just go, okay, therefore. And it was, I really recommend the first two parts of the book to everybody so they can understand the third part. And the third part where you talked about, a lot of it had to do with, you know, commodities. I mean, just stuff, you know. But I did see that you were, you leaned toward, what do they call them, ETFs, right?
I recommend some ETFs, but nothing takes the place of everybody having some gold and silver in their physical possession.
And that's one thing I wanted to make.
First and foremost.
Right after you get some food under your bed.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know, tell me about that. I mean, you know, we are getting to a point. Can you paint a picture of that? We're going to have Salente on again next Wednesday, and you know how he is, man. It's you know, blood in the streets kind of stuff. I mean, what kind of word picture are you going to get for people, you know, living here in Phoenix or any other metropolitan area or an urban area? I mean, just exactly how many rounds of ammo they got to have to defend off the galloping hordes? I mean, what are we looking at?
Well, I'll be anxious to hear Salenti on your program. He's another old favorite of mine. I used to call on him every year to set the stage for the new year. And he's one of the few people, self-styled futurists, who are a trends researcher, who actually understands what's going on. Salenti has a very, very dim view of our future prospects along the present course. And he's very wise to always say, if the present trends continue, and if the present trends continue, then we will enter a depression of amazing depths. He will tell you, for example, that the kind of civil dislocations that we saw in Greece aren't over, and they will be seen first, I think he says, in Eastern Europe and then throughout Europe before they come to America. And you know, actually, we all saw that in Atlanta fairly recently, where they were handing out just application forms for a couple of thousand people for some sort of Section 8 subsidized government housing. And they had a near riot on their hands. They had tens of thousands of people turned out for the event. And the same sort of thing took place not too long back in one of the big northern cities, you know, where they virtually, they had the virtual riot. And then the rumor swept the streets there that Obama was handing out $3,000 checks to everybody as part of the stimulus package, and it was a mob scene. Well, this is only the precursor of the things to come along our present course, if nothing changes. Now, it may be that the American people will demand some changes. It may be that the American people will, you know, have an eye-opening experience in the depth of our despair, and we can avoid something really, really ugly. But along the present trend, I mean, you know, Ernie, let me even put it a different way, if I could. The American people, like any other human beings on the face of the earth, don't need to be taught economic reality. I talked in the book about Gresham's Law. When they took the silver coins out of circulation and started replacing it with funny money, people began to take the silver coins and save them. And so if you went to the store and you bought something that cost a quarter, you'd give them one of the funny money sandwich coins. And if you had a silver quarter, you'd take that one home and throw it in the drawer. Nobody needed to be taught that behavior. It's instinctive. It's natural, normal economic behavior. It's called Gresham's Law, so it has an economic name. But it's just the sort of thing you spend to pass along the bad money, and you keep and save the good money, which is why when you go to 7-Eleven, you can always get a change in the form of a dollar bill, but nobody ever gives you a silver dollar. So Americans, by the same token, when they got a slap in the face, a cold slap in the face with a meltdown in 2008, started finally doing the right thing and trying to save. This is what we need to get out of our present circumstances. We have a crisis that was caused by too much debt. And so the American people, who had actually gone negative as far as the savings rate went, who had actually started to eat their seed corn, much less save anything, started to change their behavior and save. And what has the federal government done? It's done everything possible to thwart that behavior. It's lowered interest rates so that savings are not profitable. You can't get an interest return. And while the American people are trying to save and pay off debt, the federal government is piling the debt on at incredible rates, just the exact wrong thing, so that our problems are magnified.
On top of my grandchildren, how is it their debt? Will they pay it? Can they? We'll talk about it when we come back with Charles Goyette in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, well, I got Charles Goyette on the line with me here. We're bringing him into the Freedoms with an S, Freedoms Phoenix Studio from Scottsdale, where it's, he don't want to brave traffic, he can do it by phone. So we have, in the last segment here, I just wanted to make sure that we got to finish up on anything you had to say about the...
Yeah.
The way this is going to be, because this is for, you know, our loved ones. I mean, we have, you know, like, we have a lot of the guys that come down here. You know what they started to do today? Keith, one of the activists, he came down and, you know, the honeycomb hideout thing. And he comes down and he's doing a YouTube, and he starts, a lot of these people are starting to want to get on record, doing YouTubes that's addressed to their families, you know, saying, look, I want to do my, I know you, whenever I'm standing in front of you, it's kind of this, you're just waiting for something to say, as opposed to, I'm just, you know, here, just watch this, just shut up, and let me tell you what I know is coming, the signs to look for, because I want you to survive. And that's what, you know, Charles, help me out here, man. You know, I want the audience to be able to survive this. What should they do?
Well, I guess in the time available, they ought to just go buy my book. And I don't say that for the profit motive. Actually, the paperback comes out at the 1st of November. You can save money and buy it there. But I think
I agree. Buy Charles's book. I'll give you that. Go ahead.
I really do. And it doesn't make that much. It's not like greed motivated. I mean, of course, I want you to buy my book, but it's not going to make a big difference in the way I lead my life. But I do feel that the more people that understand the nature of the problem, the better we will be going through it. And the scary part is how we come out on the other side. And frankly, this is something I talked with Peter Schiff about on the Rand Paul Money Bomb yesterday, the prospects for averting the crisis are over. I mean, the numbers are baked into the cake. The debt does not disappear because we start electing responsible people if we were to. The debt still exists. The books will be balanced at somebody's expense down the road. And so the real question is, how do we come out on the other end of the crisis? And And I think that the more people that are prepared, look, the subtext of the book, much to the surprise of my publishers, they didn't have any idea what Austrian economics was about. But as I wove the thread throughout the book, the subtext of the book was to teach people about 2 + 2 = 4 economics, that we cannot spend our way to prosperity, that prosperity is a result of capital, that capital is the result of a production in excess of what we consume. It has always been thus, and it will continue to be so. So as long as the government is putting us in debt faster than we are paying off debt, faster than we're retiring debt, there will be a reckoning and somebody's going to pay for it. So I deal with all of that in the book, and I hope people find it helpful. But Ernie, can I just say something about Ron Paul today because it's his birthday?
Please.
Yeah. Because, I don't think anybody knows at least some of my philosophies about these things better than you. I am a total skeptic about the political process, and I am really, really reluctant to roll up my shirt sleeves and help a political candidate because I think the problem is much bigger than political candidates. The ultimate fault, I mean, it's like the Constitution. The Constitution is a wonderful document. The Constitution is even an inspired document, but it is a dried up piece of parchment if the people think that it puts us on automatic pilot and they can ignore questions of liberty and that the Constitution will take care of everything for them. And it's the same with the political process. So I think the battle is won and lost at the level of the people. So I'm very reluctant to help a political candidate, but I certainly wanted to help Rand Paul running for Senate in Kentucky with this Rand Paul money bomb, randpaul2010.com, or isupportrandpaul.com to listen to the money bomb and all the guests and so on. And the reason I wanted to do it is out of respect for Ron Paul. Let's be candid. Ron Paul may run for president again, and I certainly hope he does, and I didn't want him to quit in the last election. He may run again in 2012, but today is his 75th birthday. And as great a standard bearer as Ron Paul has been, we are not likely to see his kind again in this country for a very, very long time. We have seen precious few like him in the time I have been alive and paying attention to the political process. I mean, you think about this man. Who has refused to participate in the congressional retirement plan? That means he doesn't have his snout in the trough like all of the other elected officials. This man he returns a portion of his bloated office budget to the taxpayers every year. He doesn't spend it just because it's there. This man has never taken a taxpayer-paid junket. This man has never voted for a budget that was not balanced. This man has never voted for a law, no matter the pressure, that was not constitutional. Now, you know they can treat you awfully badly there in the halls of power in Washington, D.C. You don't go along with the program. Oh, here's your office for the next 2 years. It's a broom closet, far, far away from the floor of the Capitol. They can treat you really, really badly, but no matter the blandishments of power, no matter the pressure that he received, no matter the heat that he took since the 1970s, Ron Paul has been a great, great standard bearer for freedom, for economic liberty, and a great force for educating the American people. Despite enormous pressure to capitulate, he is a remarkable man. Today is his 75th birthday. And that's why I helped his son Rand Paul with the money bomb at randpaul2010.com.
I can concur. I was never inspired by Rand like I was Ron. And I think a lot of people that were paying attention to understand our sentiments. But, there's probably, I can think of few better birthday gifts you can give someone like Dr. Paul, 75 years of, you know, for a long time standing up for this stuff, even running as a libertarian for president. I mean, you know, he's not embarrassed by it. And that's one thing that we knew. He was going to embrace that, and that was going to be one of his strengths. And the bad guys didn't see it. They didn't understand it. You know, one thing I saw it was just here recently that he was on one of the talking head programs, and they were going on about how, yeah, but he didn't participate in this stock market run up in the 90s and early 2000s and so on, but he missed out on all the growth and all this other stuff. And when you mention that he doesn't participate in the congressional retirement program, I remembered his answer to them. He goes, I bought gold when it was $35.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah. I knew this was, that's why I ran for Congress. When the Bretton Woods went out, yeah, and you had Nixon going off the gold standard and all this stuff. He goes, I know where this ends. And every single one of the policies out of Congress, as he's sitting there watching it happen, he knew it was going to make his investment far more valuable, way more than any congressional retirement, no matter how much they amped it up in inflated dollars anyway. So he goes, you know, I just keep putting it all in gold. I'm coming out ahead. You guys, you want to know where I got my retirement program? From you being stupid. That's where he didn't say that, but I can understand from his perspective. It almost feel guilty taking any congressional retirement program when he was making so much money on them being stupid by investing precious metals.
Well, he has always resisted the groupthink that has the talking heads and the political discussion in America and most of talk radio and so on, booing and awing about the latest scandal of the day. I remember during the presidential race, he got a big contribution. Somebody uncovered the fact that somebody that had made a big contribution to Congressman Paul was some fellow who was disreputable for his beliefs about this, that, or the other. And you know how they cluster about all the, are you going to give the money back? Do you realize you took this money? Do you understand what this person's views are? When are you going to give the money back? So-and-so got money from a disreputable person, and whenever they were found out, they gave the money back. He doesn't buy this group think that has everybody gasping in horror. And he said, why should I give the money back if it's a disreputable person with despicable views? They will use that money to further their despicable views. They gave the money to me, and I will use it to further my reputable views.
And it didn't come from the government, so, you know, it wasn't stolen from you. So it's mine now. So I have a lot of respect for him. When they get into tight situations like this, they try to embarrass him or using public polls or something to pressure him, and he always counters with principle and kicks their butt.
And it gets better every year.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, I would have thought that, you know, other people that are endorsed by him and people want to run under his name and all that kind of stuff, and even his family, they don't have the experience he does. They're not as quick to default to principle as he is. That's why I was so much behind him so early on. I mean, you remember back before the revolution was even, you know, seen anywhere. I mean, I tell you, you remember me coming up and going, do I look like there's any doubt in my face? You remember? I knew what was going to happen, and it's happened. I'm really glad that we got to spend Dr. Paul's birthday together and wish him a happy birthday and give him the best for his son and promote on top of Freedom's Phoenix. You'll see Rand Paul's election platform and links to support for him. Charles, thanks for coming on and doing your best to help, you know, save the lives of my audience, because I know they needed it.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Ernie. Thank you.
We'll be seeing you next week on the radio here on on Liberty News Radio. We'll be right back early next week with all kinds of good stories from the weekend, because you know there's going to be, and we'll keep track of them for you. Go be free.